Renegade Broadcasting.
I almost dropped my mic. Well, hello everyone. Happy Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in to Renegade Broadcasting. And I am the mystery host. This is Bill, by the way. I will be picking up the Tuesday slot for the time being. So, hey, totally awesome. Hope everyone is doing okay today. Thank you for tuning in to the Renegade Broadcasting Network. And my show will be called Westworld. And in Westworld, nothing is as it seems. I guess that's kind of like my idea. I'm gonna go with that one. I'm gonna roll with that because it was kind of a cool movie for its time, and they actually revamped it. But you know, I like the idea. I think West, it's a great direction to go in. Always go west until you get too far, and then you eventually hit the Orient. So yes, Bill will be taking up the Tuesday slot, so you'll get to see a little bit more of me and a little bit more of my perspectives on the world. I hope I'm coming in clear. This is a new mic. I decided to buy a Snowball. I don't know how well it works. Is it clear? Oh no, I can't see the chat. That's weird. All right, well, sorry everyone, so I won't be able to get to see your lovely comments. So, how's everyone doing on the other side of the apocalypse? How was the solar eclipse? Did everyone have fun? It was okay. It was cool for me. It was cool enough. I mean, it was only a partial eclipse on my side, but, you know, if you got to live in the zone of totality, it was probably pretty neat. But I will have to admit, though, there were a lot of anchormen, a lot of news people acting like total... they were acting like total douchebags about the event, just kind of making fun of the tin foil hat people. I remember the, who was it? Shepard Smith or something like that. They were joking around on it. They had the Fox News prostitutes going about fooling with people. And so, you know, I guess it's predictable enough. I guess it really wasn't the end of the world, was it? But, you know, of course, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, if you kind of, you know, examine where a lot of this comes from, you know, these doomsday religions or these doomsday prophecies or whatnot, most of them stem from Christianity, because in general, Christianity is a doomsday cult. I mean, consider it from this angle. What's the most relevant part of Christianity? Well, it's Revelations. All the other books of the Bible are just kind of, you know, already happened or just seemingly less relevant. The only thing that has yet to occur is the book of Revelation. So naturally, Christians in general will end up looking into it, reading about it, and going crazy over it. And of course, most of you people are thinking, well, not everyone's a Christian. Well, that's accurate. Most people aren't Christians, but we are a, for lack of a better term, Christian society. So Christendom has generally plays a large role, I think, in a lot of the ways we behave or the way that we conduct ourselves. So it's no surprise to me that whenever any sort of event of any kind comes around, there's this underlying tone of apocalypse, death and destruction. Now, I do believe, I mean, looking at our ancient history, our prehistory, our prehistoric history, it most certainly does look like some sort of catastrophic event had occurred on this planet, where it looks like ancient civilizations are have more or less disappeared. I mean, for like comparison, I mean, look at Egypt. Most of Egypt hasn't even been fully explored yet. Most of the things are still under the sands of the area. I would contend that I think we've only dug up a fraction of what Egypt used to be. So and one can argue about the whole apocalypse thing, that it may be just a part of human nature in general, because Christendom didn't necessarily create the doomsday narrative. It seems to just be playing off of that irrational fear, or the potential for an irrational fear. It might be completely rational for all I know. I can't say with absolute certainty. But, you know, I mean, you know, there's stories about great floods, and I mean, everyone, seemingly every culture or peoples on the planet seem to have some sort of apocalypse-like narrative or story, you know, like the Great Flood. I mean, but frankly, the Great Flood in the Bible is just an appropriated version from older societies. The Judaic version is just a copy of the Sumerian and the Babylonian, and perhaps the Babylonians probably even copied theirs from Sumer or whatnot. But like I said, I mean, you know, the whole flood thing seems to be prevalent. Like, even the Celtic people have their own. I think some Amerindians have their own flood stories. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, in general, Christians tend to gravitate towards chaos, death, and destruction because we're all awaiting judgment by some sort of nefarious God. But, you know, the Judaic God sounds very nefarious by my accounts, by what it looks like to me. He seems like a real jerk. But, you know, he's the God of love or something. Yeah, I don't know. Christians are a little crazy with some of their viewpoints. But in general, that's why I think, like, a lot of these apocalypse narratives kind of spring up, because I think a large base of people are in that Christian mindset, or they're influenced by it. So I think naturally they gravitate towards it. I mean, just examine Christians in general and the history of predictions. I mean, I remember, who remembers 2012? I remember in 2012 that there were large billboards down on Stevens Creek. I think it was Stevens Creek. On Stevens Creek, where there were Christian organizations that were professing the end of the world or something like that. You know, pretty pretty typical stuff at a certain point. But Christians in general have a long history of false history, a long history of predicting apocalypse. Like the Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, are a notorious group that don't tend to acknowledge their own past. I mean, a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses that come to your door, which I've entertained plenty of them, you know, I mean, their driving force is the you know, the Book of Revelations or something. They come to your door and they want to tell you about the two most important books of the Bible, which is Genesis and Revelations. Everything else, you just breeze right past it. You get in the door for Genesis, but you stick around for Revelations. But the history of the Jehovah Witnesses that not a lot of people are too aware of, and that the Jehovah Witnesses don't readily discuss, is their history of schisms and how their founder, C.T. Russell, was he predicted, he had several false predictions of the apocalypse in his time around the turn of the century. I think they were called the Bible Study Group. They weren't, I don't think they were quite the Watchtower Society yet, but I mean, you can like go to the Wikipedia page and you can see that the Jehovah's Witnesses specifically have various schisms because they were driven by false predictions and through just generally being weird, because the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, as much as they try to pretend like they're the real, or that they're the only authentic Christian group out there, they have some really odd beliefs that they don't like to discuss, like how C.T. Russell was a pyramidologist and how he thought that you can examine the pyramids and like figure out a timeline of the pyramids, and that's relevant, or it can equate to today's timeline. Pyramidology is really bizarre, but some Christian people have really, really thought it was neat. Like even his tombstone or his memorial is a goddamn pyramid. And he even has a Templar symbol on it. You know, he's got the crown and a cross through it or something. You know, Jehovah's Witnesses are full of contradictions. And I would like to do a show talking about, I think maybe we'll call it Know Your Christian, where I get to sit around and talk about all these weird Christian factions and their different belief systems and how they try to one-up each other, and how they think that they are the true Israelites, because secretly all Christians think they're the true Israelites. They all contend for it. They all secretly think they are, and they all kind of want their own supremacy in that respect. You know what? I did... Oh my god, where are my manners? I ran right into this, and I didn't even get started with my typical introduction. I didn't do my shout-outs. I didn't comment on anything. You know, I really jumped the gun on this one. I apologize. So, we're gonna have to take a step back for a moment. So, I'm going to give a shout-out to Herr Nordstrom. Giving a shout-out to Herr Nordstrom, because that guy, even though he's fairly small, he does upload certain videos of Renegade Broadcasting and I think William Luther Pierce and Urban Jungle Girl and various other videos onto YouTube. But if it wasn't for Herr Nordstrom, I wouldn't have found Renegade Broadcasting, because I was initially learning more about Christianity. I was listening to Truth Hurts over YouTube because, like a lot of people, I think I relied on YouTube as my only alternative source to try to figure things out or to listen to other people, because it's such a modular platform where most people can just kind of jump on board and say whatever it is they want. So through that, I found Herr Nordstrom's channel, where he had various videos uploaded of Charles Giuliani and whatnot. And if you don't know who Charles Giuliani is, if you're fairly new to this, I recommend that you listen to him. He's a very, very, very adamant in his beliefs. He was a former minister, I believe. I believe he was a former minister of a church. And once he went through divinity school, he realized that Christianity was kind of a joke, and that a lot of the people organizing Christianity or Christian groups and a lot of pastors were disingenuous, and that they were a bunch of liars and dirtbags, which, to my own personal experience, seems to be true. I think most Christian ministers have their doubts and they just don't express it. But if I think you get to know them a little bit more personally, I think elements of it kind of show. So yeah, that's and it was through that, because I wanted to learn more about Charles Giuliani. I eventually figured out that he was on Renegade Broadcasting, or that's where he was currently, and that's how I ended up here. And I just started listening in, and I was like a lurker for a while. I was just kind of sitting back and listening. But even at that time, which was only like it was less than a year ago, surprisingly, I was still kind of lurking around, like, yeah, this network is pretty good. I like it. This is really sticking to me. This is better than Red Ice Radio, infinitely better than Alex Jones. I mean, what a clown. And Jeff Rentz was interesting, but he's just a little, you know, a little weird. But pretty much, I Renegade was so much more engaging, and it was so much more interesting than these other groups or these other radio guys. However, at the time, though, I still wasn't. I was still in that corner or in that area where I was like, oh, but these guys are Nazi worshippers. They're so foolish. Look at these foolish people. They think that the Nazis were so great, but I know that they are secretly Jews and that they're working for the Jew World Order. Yeah, I was in that crowd, and actually a lot of people are in that crowd. They seem to think that they, you know, you just cruise around YouTube. And the reason why I talk about YouTube a lot, or I'll reference YouTube a lot, is because a lot of people do use it. You see, the great thing about YouTube is that you can go there to find things. It's easier to find things on YouTube than it is on the net. You can find literally anything on the net, but the problem is that you kind of have to know what you're looking for. And YouTube is just really easy because it just kind of links you other videos to it, and you can just kind of click around and just follow the trail, and you'll eventually find something rather interesting or unique. But yeah, I was in that crowd, but then because I heard references to the documentary Hailstorm and The Greatest Story Never Told, and because I was a fairly open-minded person, I decided to watch both those documentaries, and I was greatly impressed by it. In fact, when I saw The Greatest Story Never Told, I literally wept. When I got to the part where it talked about Goebbels and how he killed his, or rather, how Goebbels and his wife killed his family through cyanide pills because they didn't want to be killed by those Bolshevik animals. I actually did. I actually wept because I realized at that point just the savage hypocrisy in media and through history, because I recalled how when the Romans sacked Jerusalem, I believe, I don't know when the Romans sacked Jerusalem, I remembered how I think the Jews within the gates, like, killed themselves. They killed their women and their children. I think a lot of them committed mass suicide, if I recall accurately. And then when I listened to that story about, you know, and I already knew that story. I knew that Goebbels committed suicide, but the way that, you know, the History Channel and others always talk about it is that they call them evil, sadistic people. Like, how evil these people were to kill their own children for their Nazi ideology. You know, they always give it that spin of how wicked and sinister these people are. But once I saw that, and I saw the human face of Goebbels and Hitler, and the National Socialist movement in general, I was so saddened by it. It just dawned on me that, you know, here is a man and his wife who killed their children for the greater good. You know, if these people allowed those Bolshevik animals to get their hands on their children, I have no doubt in my mind that I was convinced that these creatures, these animals, probably would have molested and raped them to death because of just how these creatures, I don't even want to call them animals, because animals function on their own terms, which is neither wrong or right, but these Jewish beasts and how they transformed Russia and Eastern Europe. Because I was aware of that at the time. I did know about the Jewish problem. I was just in that irrational sphere where I just thought everyone's a Jew. Everything is a Jewish conspiracy. There's no way out of it. It's all Jewish controlled. So, and you know, I don't really put a whole lot of blame on the Russians and how they behave, because, you know, in essence, a lot of us are a product of our environment to an extent, and the way that these Jews utilize psychology, torture, and just the domination of society, they can expect certain results out of people. And so I don't look at the Russians in general as bad people because of how they may have behaved in Russia and how they may have raped Germans because they were conditioned into that. Not only that, but I was also aware of how the inner circle of the Bolsheviks, how they secretly didn't trust Eastern Europeans or Europeans in general. And I believe that they did use Mongolian bodyguards and other Asiatic peoples as a presence within their military. I've heard stories about that, and I know that there are claims that this is not true. There are people on message boards on the internet that really question this. But I've seen pictures of these Mongolians dressed as Soviets, and I can only imagine that that has to be true. If you recall, the Soviet actually it was the White Army poster that depicts Trotsky, born Lebstein or Lebstein, as Satan. You see that he's this big ugly Jew Satan, and he's sitting over a pile of corpses. But if you pay attention, you can see that he's got these little yellow men that are working for him, or that are under his control, and he's killing white people or white Eastern Europeans. Now, generally, this type of imagery is discredited by historians, I'm putting in air quotes, because they just perceive it as white army propaganda, and their fear of Asians and whatnot. But I suspect that, like I said, I suspect that that's probably true. They probably didn't use it. It would make sense that they would, that Trotsky and the Bolsheviks that were given money by Western powers probably use that money to fund militias and mercenaries to help gain control of Eastern Europe or whatnot. I suspect that makes sense. I've also heard allegations that these Mongolian mercenaries were paid off with whatever they could get. I don't recall where I read that. I don't recall where I heard it, but it seems very reasonable that I heard that these mercenaries were like, hey, whatever you get is yours. You get to ransack, destroy, loot, and take things, but whatever you get, you can have. It's all yours to keep. And if you ask me, that's not a far cry from the ancient Mongolian archetype of a raider, a destroyer, and a pirate. How does this relate to what I was talking about? I guess what I was saying was, I don't blame the Russians for how they may have behaved, because I believe that in the proper circumstances, even the best of us can be transformed into lowly beasts. But yeah, about Goebbels and killing of his family, I was so saddened by it. I was like, can you imagine how awful that would have been for think of Goebbels. I don't know what his wife's name was. I'll just call her Goebbels' wife. Could you imagine just how painful that would have been for her to put cyanide pills in each of their mouths and kill them? And if you've never seen someone killed by a cyanide pill or a cyanide capsule, it's pretty horrific. I've seen it before. I've seen someone, internet's a wild place, and I have seen it. It's pretty graphic. It's pretty disturbing. Their faces turn bright cherry red. They start convulsing. They start foaming. They start choking. They make horrible noises. And she did it to four children? Absolutely, absolutely terrible. But yet, you know, it's you know, it's television, it's TV land, where, you know, everything the Germans do is awful, evil. They're nefarious people. They did nothing right, and that's what we're told. And that's how we're told to perceive them. But when you begin to see that other side of them, it becomes a lot more difficult to just go along with that. I mean, after a while, it looks like a joke. Looks like a joke to think that these guys were all evil people that just kind of lulled the entire public into following them. And, you know, they don't have to explain how it happened. It just happened. All the German people were just duped into following them, because if you didn't listen to them, you were going off to the concentration camps. You were going to be killed. Even though Hitler won democratically, let's just ignore that. The Germans were just dupes. Evil people. They need to be killed. They need to be controlled. So yeah. That was a. You know, it's funny to think that, you know, I would say in less than a year, I think I've come a long way from that position to being right here, where, you know, I want to do my part and I want to give a little bit of relief to Kyle and his efforts at Renegade Broadcasting, and hopefully entertain some of you as well. I don't know how well I'll how long I'll be here. I don't know if my certain interests will be of your interests, but, you know, my hope is that we get to walk away from every episode learning something new. Believe me, I have no rhyme or rhythm to what I'm going to be talking about. I'm just going to kind of be all over the place. So, you know, I hope it'll be a grab bag. It'll be a mystery of fun, hopefully. I'm hoping that's what it will be like. We're coming up to the first break very soon, and I think I will address one other thing. I would like to... Well, I'll pick this up right after the break.
Issuing statements in support of refugees. These have included the Orthodox Union, the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, and so many of the Jewish organizations that you heard are co-sponsors of this event.
Times before.
Okay, we're back. So I was about to bring up this comment from my last video, the video I did 2 weeks ago. I'd like to mention my favorite comment came from a commenter. Her name was Amber. So if you're listening to this, awesome. Amber, she left me a very nice comment on my video, and she... What did she say? Oh, yes, that's right. She mentioned that she wanted to do a show herself, that she would like to do a... the impression, I guess, that she would like to do a wildcard slot, but she was afraid that she may not have enough material for 2 hours. Well, I would say, you know, awesome. Amber, I encourage you to do a wildcard slot. They are pretty fun, actually. You don't have to be nervous if you've never done this before. I mean, my first wild card slot wasn't great. I tried to do it about comic books, which, if anything, I should probably redo it. It wasn't a great show, but it was my first show, and it was my first step towards actually participating in trying to make a difference in some way. And this goes out to anyone who's thinking about this and would maybe like to try and do a wild card slot. I would highly encourage it. It's, like I said, it's actually can be pretty fun, and I would say not to worry about it too much, because look, you can get into contact with Kyle. He's very easygoing. He's very forgiving. I mean, if it goes catastrophically horrible, like what Kyle told me, then we'll just pretend like it never even happened. So, I mean, I don't want to walk off on a bad note, but I would say, you know, empower yourself. That's what I would say about it. Empower yourself and go ahead and do it, and you know, throw your voice out there, and you know, who knows. It might turn out to be a really good show, and you know, afterwards, I mean, I felt pretty good about it. I was like, yeah, you know, I actually did it, and it wasn't that bad. And the thing that I like about Renegade Broadcasting, or the thing that I've the impression I really get, is that, you know, this network, unlike other networks, it really does feel like a community. I mean, I don't really know how else to really express it, but the thing that's really impressed me about Renegade Broadcasting and the work that Kyle and Sinead and others have done is that it's just, you know, it feels very homey to me. And, you know, again, I apologize. I cannot see the chat. So if people are talking, maybe the chat's down or something, but so, you know, I would like to see that. But the impression I get is that this is a fairly tight-knit community. It's not very large in the sense that it's not a big tent, and that's a turn-off to me. I think if any group gets too big or really tries to go out and expand its arms and get as much as you can, you end up pulling in a... unsavory characters, I guess. But that has impressed me a lot with Renegade Broadcasting. It seems like it's a very... a lot of people seem very nice. A lot of people seem very forgiving. And a lot of people are very open-minded, too, as well. And that's something that impresses me. I like the amount of diversity that Renegade Broadcasting tends to attract as well. You know, you have these... you have these people that... believe, you know, like Patrick Chouinard, who believes that we did go to the moon or that we can traverse space. I personally don't think we did, but just because I don't think that we did, it doesn't mean that I dislike anyone who thinks that we do. You know, I mean, we have I think that we do have a fairly large number of opinions that congregate to Renegade Broadcasting. I think, you know, the number one thing is that I think we all in general believe that we deserve a nation of our own and that the races should be separate, which to me is a good thing. I think that absolutely, I think that we need that. And another thing is that we I think many of us are convinced that the National Socialists were doing the best that they could. If anything, they were anti-New World Order, but you know, if you go around to the into the conspiracy realm, they absolutely believe that the Nazis were an aspect of the New World Order, which, you know, is you know, it's absolutely silly when you really look at it, when you critically examine it outside the guise of the stupid box in your bedroom, living room, or wherever. So yeah, Amber, you know, believe me, let me say it this way, Amber, you could not sound possibly as dumb as me. So that's all the encouragement you need. If I can do this, anyone can do it. So go right ahead. Go right ahead and do it. I encourage you. I believe in you. Oh my, I'm just off today. Everything I'm doing is wrong. You know, I didn't even get to what I saw this week. You know, that's going to be a little second. What I saw this week. And, you know, there's been 2 weeks, and there's actually been quite a few very strange and interesting things that have that I've crossed paths with. So, you know, to save time, I'll only go with one. Maybe I'll talk about another one next week or something. But this was strange. So I was walking down. You know what? I cannot recall what road it was, but it was right in front of the pink poodle. If anyone knows what the pink poodle is, that is a infamous strip club in San Jose. In fact, that entire area is very seedy. It's a very seedy area. There's like the there's like a apparently there's now a Hustler's store. Apparently, Hustler is a line of clothing. Yeah, apparently it's a line of clothing or something. It's lingerie. I don't know what it is, but there's several billboards for Hustler at that corner as well. And there's a store for Hustler, so they got billboards right next to the store telling you to go over to Hustler's and buy skankware. But yeah, right in front of the pink poodle, there was this guy. There's also a lot of, like, homeless people at that corner, and there's now a lot of condemned buildings there, too. That entire area is just, you know, it's gone. The entire blocks of just closed-up stores. Either they just can't make it, or they've been bought out. But yeah, there's this guy at the by the corner, and this guy was clearly a transient. I don't know where he was going. He just had a backpack. But he was by the sidewalk, and he was aggressively trying to get people's attention. He was trying to hitchhike, which is unusual. You don't see a lot of hitchhikers nowadays, but this guy was trying to get a ride. And I say he was aggressively trying to get a ride. He was like stepping out into the road and with his thumb out, just trying to get someone to pick him up. And as I walk by this guy, he looks over to me and asks me, "What time is it?" And I was 7 o'clock, I think. 7 o'clock. But, you know, I just kept going. I wasn't going to stick around and listen to this guy. He seemed a little weird. And as he's like, and as I'm walking away, again, of course, you know, the cars start coming by, and he walks out, and he uses his hand out, and he's like, "Hey, pick me up, pick me up." And I don't know what was exchanged, but like I said, he was like standing out in the road, and so this truck came driving by. I don't know if he stopped or said something, but I can hear this guy just yelling. The guy who's trying to get who's trying to hitchhike, and he said something like, "Fuck you! I'm gonna kill you!" or something like that. This guy was like yelling. He was yelling profanities, and he was yelling about. I swear, I heard him say something about killing this other person or something. And I heard him when I was walking up to him, and I also heard him when I was walking away from him. I wonder where this guy was trying to go. Where was he trying to go? And who honestly picked this guy up? This guy was clearly just out of his mind or something, or he was just violent, aggressive. He had a way with words. Just let's just put it that way. That was my passing experience with this guy. But you know, my father told me this story, and I don't know how true it is. I mean, he's never been to Europe. I've never been to Europe. I've never been out of the States. But you know, my dad told me that when you were younger, or that when he was young, that you could go to a place like Europe and hitchhike across the continent, and that through the generosity of others, that they would allow you to stay with them, they would allow you to have that they would give you dinner and stuff like that. Like I said, I don't know how true that is, but what I do know is that if there was anywhere where something like that could occur, it would be in a place like Europe or North America. If there was any place that would, that's where it would occur, because the generosity of the white man is unparalleled to any other group of peoples on this planet. That much I do know. But reflecting on it, that's a very quaint idea when you think about it, you know, having the ability to just, I mean, that's what society should be like. It should be safe enough to the point where you could, you know, that you could rely on the generosity of others, where you wouldn't have to be xenophobic of other people. And that's what we have in our modern society. You know, this guy just trying to hitchhike across the United States. You know, who'd want to pick this guy up? I would never pick a guy up off the side of the road. I wouldn't do it. I just assume it's unsafe because, you know, he's a complete stranger. But like I said, that's the modern world we find ourselves in, where we just can't trust anyone. We're also individualistic in our behaviors. We resist other people, and I find that to be very unfortunate. And part of this is brought about because we live in a multicultural society, you know, multi-ethnic society, multiracial society. It's all of that. It's all of those things. It's and you know, it's very unfortunate. It shouldn't have to be that way, but that is the way it is now, seemingly. But you know, I do remember that there was one time a guy who was hitchhiking and he had $20 on him. He had money, trying to get someone to pick him up. And is that what it's come down to? You know, that we can't trust anyone. You know, it's that aspect of community. You know, it's a good talk to talk about community. Oh, we need community. Oh, we should have a good community. And I agree. We all should have great communities, but there is no community anymore. Not in the States. I don't even know if there's any community in Europe anymore. It doesn't exist. Why should, how do you make a community with different people? How do you expect, how do you expect me to, form a community with, Jose, Tao and Rajit? That's the type of demographics in San Jose. You know, it's, yeah, you just got a grab bag of a bunch of different people from a bunch of different places. Why would they want to be a community with me? Why should I be a community with them? You know, they have their own things going on for them. They got their own family, their own type of backgrounds and origins. You know, you can't it doesn't make any sense. It's paradoxical. You have all these politicians running around nowadays saying, "Oh, we need we need diversity, but we should also be a community." And you know, it's such a lie. There is no community anymore. It's all been gone. It's all been removed. It's gone the way of the white man. When you're no longer the majority of your lands, of your nations, and your towns, there is no community anymore. It's all been removed. And yet, it's such a common talk. It's just air. That's all it is. They're just blowing air out of their mouths. Community and coming together. And it's like, I don't see it. Maybe it's because I'm not trying hard enough, but I don't see anyone else trying. I don't see anyone else interested. And I'm not interested. Believe me, I would love it. I would love a community. I think we all need strong community strong community efforts, and that can help create independence. But again, that's not the archetype of the type of society economic structure that we have. It's multiculturalism. It's Agenda 21. It's not going to be like that. So yeah, that's my thoughts on what I saw this week. You know, just a guy trying to go somewhere, and who knows, and no one can help him, no one wants to help him. Should he even be helped? Very, very disappointing when you think about it in those terms. It reflects a lot on our society as well, or it reflects on how we operate. So, you know, a lot has happened in the past 2 weeks from when I did my show talking about the solar eclipse, the solar eclipse that had crossed America. And last week I wanted to do a follow-up show with that solar eclipse and talk a little bit more in depth about it, because I was talking about gematria, solar eclipse, and predictions and prophecies. And I've found some more interesting information on the topic that I would like to just bring up, because believe me, I like me some conspiracies. I think conspiracies are fascinating. I think they're interesting. Conspiracies in general, though they have a bad name because they've been labeled bad, I find conspiracy theorists and conspiracy-minded people to be intellectually engaging, because many of them attempt to formulate their own opinions on things. So I find that to be fascinating. So expect that of me. I hope you don't blame me. But I will be talking about conspiracies and whatnot, because I find them fascinating. I find certain aspects of it really fun. It just entertains me. It just gets me thinking, gets me going. So to recap on a couple things, because a couple things I forgot to mention, a couple things I forgot to bring up. I mentioned the phenomenon that I'll call the 119 programming. I mentioned that it had relations to Donald Trump. Excuse me. That some people think that this was a numerology event. That was predicting Donald Trump becoming president. And although I mentioned some things like how it was seen in Donnie Darko and a couple commercials, and there's even one guy who thinks that the 119 was present in the Lego movie. I didn't mention it because it was a little complicated, and when things get a little bit too complicated, I tend to take a step back and say, well, maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing. But I believe Donald Trump did become president, or was announced president, on 11/9. I believe, if I recall accurately. So he was announced as president on the 11th month of the ninth day. And I see that some people are equating that, like, oh, there it is. There's the proof of the 119 programming. That you see, there's the connection with Donald Trump, because he was announced president on that date. So, you know, and examining the potential of what's called the 119 programming, there could be something to it. There legitimately might be something there. So I guess my thought would be, pay attention to it. Maybe if you see 119 juxtaposed strangely, or in a movie or cinema, maybe there's something to it. At the very least, it was at least interesting, to say the least. However, I did find a very fascinating article about numerology. Let's see, I gotta open it up. Let's see, where did I put it? Uh-oh. Maybe it's on my favorites list. Sorry, folks, I forgot to open it up. It's about Donald Trump. This was a person who wrote this article about Donald Trump. And it was about the... Oh, there it is. Found it. Sorry. You know, it's really hard to multitask and talk at the same time, attempting to do that. You know, I mentioned how I am slightly skeptical of numerology, but when certain things like this occur, it does kind of make me think a little bit. This I found this article on IWB, which is investmentwatchblog.com. I have no clue what this website is, but look at this headline. This seems to all be true, and you know, it's one of these things that really makes me think. It says Donald Trump was born exactly 700 days before Israel became a nation. I will read the article. Do you want to see something amazing? If you go to any of the major search engines and ask when Donald Trump was born, you will be told that it happened on June 14th, 1946. And then if you go to any of the major search engines and ask when Israel became a nation, you will be told that it happened on May 14th, 1948. If you take both of those dates and plug them into a handy calculator provided by timeanddate.com, I went to a different website where I checked out these, you know, they got these websites where you can like punch in two different dates and it will tell you like how many days were between them. You know, it's a very easy and convenient way to try to figure out if there's anything to these dates. And let me tell you, the hidden hand that is controlling this world, it's very kosher, but they use dates very, very specifically. They love dates. They love time. Okay, continuing on. You will discover that Donald Trump was born exactly 700 days before Israel became a nation. I was first alerted to this incredible fact by the Daily Cow. Here are some other incredible numbers that link Donald Trump and Israel from that same source. Israel was 77 days old, exactly 777 days after Donald Trump was born. Israel's 70th birthday will come exactly 700 days after Trump's 70th birthday. Of course, because it was... dates, but there's a couple other things near the bottom that's really neat. Donald Trump won the election on Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's seventh year, seventh month, and seventh day in office. Hear that? Donald Trump won the election on Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's seventh year, seventh month, and seventh day in office. On top of everything else, Donald Trump will be 70 years, 7 months, and 7 days old on his first day in the White House. As I noted above, Donald Trump was born on June 14th, 1946. Moving forward exactly 70 years from that date brings you to June 14th, 2016. Moving forward exactly 7 months from that date brings you to January 14th, 2017. And if you add another 7 days, that brings you to January 21st, 2017. Donald Trump will be inaugurated on January 20th and will be president for part of the day, but his first full day in office will be on January 21st. As incredible as this may sound, this will happen during year 5777, year 5777 on the Hebrew calendar. In addition, it turns out that there are some very strange coincidences surrounding Mike Pence as well. Here we get more stuff from the Daily Cow. Yeah, I didn't think this was as interesting, but I'll read it anyway. He will be 57 years old and will take office in the Hebrew calendar of 7777. So we got 5757. The last minute of Mike Pence's 27th year will take place 1 minute before the 50th anniversary of Jerusalem. Pence was 50th governor of Indiana of 2017. Pence was born in Columbus. Trump Tower is located 0.7 miles down 57th Street from Columbus Circle. Trump's Vice President Pence, the 57-year-old from Columbus. I guess we got 57th Street and 57. Could it be possible that Donald Trump and Mike Pence both have special deities above them? Now, this is the part where this guy just, like, spins off on, like, his belief that the U.S. government is opposed to Israel and that Donald Trump is going to save the day. So this is actually what makes me think that there's credibility to this article and to the person who wrote this because of his incredibly pro-Israel stance. I listen to some of the things they say. I'm not going to read all of it, but listen to some of the stuff of just how he writes this. They are going to take office at a critical time in America. Barack Obama appears determined to cause as much chaos as possible on his way out the door, and we just witnessed the greatest betrayal of Israel in all of American history. In addition to UN Security Council Resolution 2334, we are also finding out that the UN has appropriated money for a database of Israel's companies that do business in the West Bank. According to former UN Ambassador John Bolton, I think John Bolton's a Jew, by the way, the only purpose of such a database would be to punish those companies. Oy vey. And this guy just loves Israel and seems to think that Donald Trump is going to be the savior of Israel. How funny is that? Now, I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to read the rest of it, but it's these numbers that I mentioned that are so interesting that I know that the hidden hand that tries to govern over us, they love using these numbers, and I take them seriously because there is a sect of people out there, which seem to be primarily Talmudic Jews, that follow this numerology, and they seem to try to plan their events around them. Now, 777 is a unique number. Okay. Well, we'll pick this up right on the other side.
Have blessed our soil and blood.
It was meant to be.
We carry it on through drought and flood.
It was meant to be.
We built this land upon our graves.
Greetings, this is Kyle Hunt, host of The Solar Storm, coming to you every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. I deal with topics related to our past, present, and most importantly, our future. The show has a lot to offer. Occult knowledge, insightful interviews, hard-hitting analysis, and essential inspiration. I know we are living in a world filled with darkness, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We have the power to take back control of our world and reclaim our destiny. But we're running out of time. We need all hands on deck. Will you do your part? Join the struggle and fight for our freedom.
Thank you.
You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
All right, we are back, top of the hour. It is Tuesday, August 29th, 2017. I forgot to mention that at the start of the show as well. I'm just forgetting everything. So, as I mentioned, the Hidden Hand loves using these numbers. They use dates very specifically. And, you know, to them, numbers have a lot of meaning to it, to them. Now, most of this information, or most of this numerology, seems to come from the Kabbalah and Talmud, mostly the Kabbalah. But I personally don't believe that that numerology is a Jewish invention. I believe, like in all things, the Jews just appropriated this from other societies, other more advanced, more enlightened societies. Because, I mean, to me it makes sense because the Jews, historically, from what we understand, they've been these transient people that just kind of meander around from certain from one civilization to another. And I think they work, and from what we can see from like these from these Frankist Jews in Poland, they have this modus operandi where they try to, you know, schmooze their way into the upper crusts of society through royalty, pretending to be mystics, where I think they then try to secure control over society, and I believe they take what they can from them, like a parasite, and I think they keep it for themselves. I think it's odd, like how in the Bible it tells you not to study the stars or something like that, because, you know, that's magic and mysticism, even though Kabbalistic Jews literally worship the goddamn stuff. They have their entire mythos, mythology. They study this stuff intensely, which, as I understand, you know, the ancient Aryans did too. So, you know, it makes me believe that there's something to it. I know that a lot of people look at this kind of stuff and they're, you know, they're very skeptical about it and they don't know what to think about it. But I say that if the Romans, the Greeks, and the Aryans before them, if they took significant interest in this topic, I kind of assume there has to be something to it, that it's not just, you know, gobbledygook. I'm left to assume that there is something significant to this stuff, and I think that they understand it better than we do, and I think they're just trying to manipulate it so that they can manipulate society to some extent. To what extent, I don't know. But obviously, it seems to them that it gives them power. And here I'll give you some examples. So 777, if you examine it in a, I went to a website called Gematrex, that gives the breakdown or the meaning of numbers. When you put 777 in the box, it gives you like 100 different possible definitions or interpretations of 777, but the number 2 on the list is order out of chaos, which is no surprise because I've heard that before. I was familiar with it. I already kind of more or less knew that 777 typically means order out of chaos. And so if I'm seeing all these 777s in related to Trump, and you know, if you're watching the news, they make no bones about it. They're lacing the idea already, you know, Trump being the chaos president. In fact, you hear the word chaos on the news all the time, or at least to me, I hear it. I'm hearing it on the news. I don't know if it's because I'm just paying attention to it and I'm just hearing it, or these prostitutes are reading the teleprompters and they're being told to say chaos. Chaos president, chaos in the White House, chaos in the streets. I'm hearing it a lot. I mean, not every day, but I think we're hearing a lot more than we do with Obama. There's definitely something to this 777 chaos and Donald Trump. I don't know what the absolution will be. You know, I'm not a psychic. I can't predict the future, but I think there's something big in store. I don't think Donald Trump is going to be some sort of, you know, sit-in like Barack Obama, where he just kind of kept the status quo, more or less. I think Donald Trump is going to be a little bit more special than that. And here's some interesting ones that I picked up on. I stated a few weeks ago, possibly even 3 weeks ago, that Stanley Kubrick died 666 days before January 1st of 2001. Well, I put that into the time and date calculator, and that's correct. Stanley Kubrick died 666 days before the year 2001. I don't believe that was a coincidence. What it means, I don't know. And that's if Stanley Kubrick died. If it comes from the media, if it comes from a news source, I just don't know what to believe. I'm comfortable in myself enough to know that I don't know what's true and untrue. I can't confirm it. But they said he died, you know, 666 days. And to me, that means one of two things. It's not a coincidence. I guarantee you that much. It's not a coincidence. It's either he was literally killed, or they faked his death, and he didn't really die, and that they just wanted to say that so it fit in with 2001 or some sort of 666 thing with 2001. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just weird. I just know it's not a coincidence. And here's another good one with numerology that I double checked. I didn't know about this one, but here, check this one out. So Does everyone remember the Madrid bombing? I think that happened in 2005. It was a fairly big event for Europe at the time. I think it was the biggest terrorist event that had occurred after 9/11, I think. Well, how's this for a quinky-dink? The Madrid train bombing happened 911 days after the September 11 terrorist attack. 911 days. Do you think that that's just a coincidence? I don't. Not for a moment. This is numerology at its finest. That someone is working in the backgrounds because I think they think it gives them power. Oh, and here's another good one. Do you recall the 7/7 event, the 7/7 terrorist attack that happened in England? Where these this false flag event, or I don't know if people actually died. I mean, there are some English people that do believe that people died. There are some English people that don't think English people died. You know, and I'll admit, it's hard to say because I wasn't there. Was it a hoax or a false flag? I don't know, but I've seen enough evidence to, there's plenty of evidence that says that these alleged Arab terrorists that did this event, allegedly did this event, did not do it. That much is obvious, that they did not plan this event. However, what I've seen very few people catch on, or a few people that I've noticed, is that 7-7 is technically 777, because it happened on the 7th month of the 7th day, or the 7th day of the 7th month of 2005. However, if you add the numbers across, 2005 equals 7. So, technically, it's 777, or at least that's how I interpret it, just by, you know, adding the numbers across. But more than that, 777 doesn't just mean order out of chaos. If you know a thing about Las Vegas, you would also know that 777 is jackpot. Yeah, that's right. 777 is the jackpot on any slot machine. You score triple sevens and you win. But also, if you take... But also, 777 equals up to what? 21 blackjack. Now, I've heard people claim that blackjack is a nickname given to some old king of Israel or something. I tried to see if I could confirm that for myself, and I couldn't. I couldn't figure out if there was like a... I heard that they say that that Masons have a nickname for one of the kings of Israel or whatever, one of these old Jewish kings, and that his nickname was Blackjack. Like I said, I couldn't confirm it. But we do know that Jews have played a significant role in the gambling industry, and I haven't looked into it extensively. I don't know where the numbers... how 777 became a jackpot, but if I would guess anything, that this is probably some form of numerology. I'm not too certain, because I haven't looked into it, but I mean, that is odd, isn't it? 777 is jackpot. It's the winning numbers, baby. So yeah, that's a recap on gematria and numerology. However, I want to jump back to this solar eclipse that had occurred, because I mentioned that I looked into it a little bit more, and I picked up on some interesting things about solar eclipses and what is meant in history. So in the conspiracy realm, the Christian conspirators, and believe me, there are a lot of Christian conspirators out there. Some of these Christians believe that this solar eclipse that had occurred a few weeks ago was the markings, or was the beginning of the 7 years of tribulation. Because America is set to have another solar eclipse where it will end up crossing the United States, and it'll form an X. It'll intercept the crossing of this last one, of the 2017 solar eclipse. And like I said, it's set to take place 7 years after. So some Christians believe that this is the marking of the 7 years of tribulation. So we're still in the apocalypse, we just don't know it yet. Another thing was that I believe this solar eclipse actually crossed over the Georgia Guidestones. I believe the Georgia Guidestones was in the path of totality. How strange is that? Could it have been designed that way? Maybe. I'll admit, the Georgia Guidestones is weird as hell. I don't know what to think about it. It seems to be a layout. I don't know if it's just a psyops. I don't know if they're just trying to scare people that are, you know, looking into things, or if there's any real, or if that really is a blueprint for things to come. But from what I understand, I believe the path of totality did cross over the Georgia Guidestones. That's pretty strange. Another thing is that let's see, where's my article? Oh, here it is. That Nate Turner. Now, Nate Turner was a slave that led a slave rebellion in Virginia in 1831, I believe. No, that's when he died. I need to leave this rebellion. I think of 1831. I think 1831, Nate Turner, I don't know if he was a runaway slave or a free slave. He says he was here I got an article on it. Was an enslaved African American who led a rebellion of slaves to free blacks in Virginia in August 21st of 1831. Okay, yeah, so he led the rebellion in 1831, and Nate Turner, apparently, from what I read here, I double checked this because I've heard some people talking about it. Here on this paragraph, it says, beginning in February of 1831. Turner claimed certain atmospheric conditions as a sign to begin preparations for a rebellion against slave owners. On February 11th of 1831, an annular solar eclipse was visible in Virginia. Turner envisioned this as a black man's hand reaching over the sun. He initially planned the rebellion to begin on July 4th, Independence Day. Turner postponed it because of illness and to use the delay for additional planning for his co-conspirators. On August 13th, there was another solar eclipse in which the sun appeared bluish-green, possibly the result of lingering atmospheric debris from the eruption of Mount St. Helens in present-day Washington. Turner interpreted this as a final signal, and about a week later, on August 21st, he began the uprising. So, in American history, a solar eclipse apparently was the inspiration for Nat Turner's slave rebellion against the slaveholders. I guess a modern equivalence of this could actually be what could be laying out right now in the U.S., where BLM... Black Lives Matter is being looks like they're being prepped for some sort of conflict with white people, or certainly it seems that way. Also, in strangeness, kind of correlates with this was the recreation of oh god damn it, what was that called? Oh, you know, it was that movie. It was A Birth of a Nation, yes. The recreation or the re-envisionment of Birth of a Nation is based on Nat Turner's Rebellion. And let me double-check when this was made. Did it come out this year or last year? Nation. 2016. Yes, the new modern version of Birth of a Nation stars Nat Turner, or is based around Nat Turner's rebellion, and it took place in 2016. Is this a coincidence that a re-envisionment of Birth of a Nation starring Nat Turner and his slave rebellion would closely coalesce with a solar eclipse that a lot of people are freaking out over? I don't know, but it certainly is interesting to say the least, is it? Is it not? I think it is. Will we see a slave-like rebellion against people? Will the white man come under attack? Well, it certainly looks that way. But how's that one for a strange, you know, relationship about this solar eclipse? Now, I also found, while cruising around, I found this really fascinating article. Ah, here it is. A fascinating article by a guy named, where is he? His name is Alex Miller, and his bio states that Alex Miller is a professional writer and astrologer, author of The Black Hole Book, detailing deep space points and astrological interpretations, and the forthcoming Heaven on Earth, comprehensive study of asteroids, both mystic and personal. Essentially, this Alex Miller guy seems to, it looks like he's written a few books, and his fascination seems to be in looking at natal charts, and looking at certain people, and then studying certain events, and he tries to it seems like he tries to kind of predict the future of where things are going by studying the stars and planets and asteroids. That's the big thing about him. Apparently, he studies asteroids as well. He seems to think that they're important for predicting the future or something. Now, I will read this article. This article is fairly long, but I found it very fascinating about his predictions of the future and what to expect. I don't expect a lot of you to fully understand what he's talking about, because he's talking about certain degrees, and he's talking about, again, I suppose if you understand natal charts or birth star charts or something, maybe this would make more sense to you. I can't really make a lot of sense out of it. I have a basic understanding of what he's talking about, but I don't fully understand the workings of the star charts and stuff. It's kind of alien to me, but I find it fascinating. Maybe if someone's listening to this, maybe you can if I say something wrong, if this guy could be a total quack weirdo, and maybe someone in the after the show will like leave a comment talking about how absurd this all is. But you know, but I don't know, because you know I'm fully inexperienced with it. But I just found this guy's article, and I thought his interpretation was very interesting. So this is Alex Miller's interpretation of Donald Trump, and he wrote about it because of the solar eclipse. He thinks the solar eclipse is going to be like a some sort of event or trigger that will probably set plans in motion. Interesting article, to say the least. I mean, if anything, it's an interesting article. So I will read. The American Eclipse. On August 21st, 2017, the United States will experience a rare celestial event, a solar eclipse whose path of totality cuts a swath straight across the country from sea to shining sea. Entering the U.S. in Oregon, the eclipse sweeps over the Rockies, the plains, through the heartland, and exits via the deep south off the coast of South Carolina. It is perhaps ironic that the path begins in Oregon, one of the most liberal states, and ends in South Carolina, one of the most conservative states. Most of the central U.S. will see at least a partial eclipse in a phenomenon which hasn't occurred here in 99 years. Precisely at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the eclipse degree of 28 Leo 52 makes several stunning alignments, including a close conjunction with Donald Trump's natal Mars ascendant pairing at 26 and 29 Leo, as well as his asteroid America at 27 Leo. For some of these asteroids that he's naming, he'll name quite a few asteroids, which I couldn't confirm if all these asteroids exist, but I did confirm that some of them did exist. I don't think I could figure out if there really was an asteroid called America, but he says there is, or at least he's claiming there is, as well as his asteroid America at 27 Leo. For the U.S. itself, the eclipse lies opposite its natal moon, representing the people, at 27 Aquarius. Well, look at the detail. We will look at the details of these contacts more closely, but first, the eclipse itself. Two major bodies accompany the eclipse, but broadly, Mars at 27 Leo trails behind, and Mercury at 8 Virgo runs ahead. Mercury is retrograde, indicating a need to go back into old maternal and clean or clear whatever is left undone or unsaid. In Virgo, the accent is on detail. Okay, sorry. The accent is on perception and detail. leave no stone unturned in its quest to tie up loose ends. This can seem a Herculean task, but Mars is here to lend a hand. So I guess what he's talking about is that he thinks that the position of Mercury and, what do you say, Mercury and Mars is going to play a role in the coming years about cleaning up loose ends. About cleaning up loose ends and about going back to the past. That's what he's interpreting from this. Mars, with the eclipse, increases the intensity and the drama, but also provides energy and drive to accomplish what must be done. Be mindful of a tendency to lash out at others. Keep it civil, but be forceful and direct. Additional minor factors complicate manners. Exact with Mercury are asteroids Eurydike and Enteo Orcus. So, by the way, he's mentioning two asteroids, Eurydike and Orcus. He talks about NTO. NTO stands for Trans-Neptunian Object. Essentially, it just means that it is a asteroid or something that lies beyond Neptune. So that's what NTO stands for, Enteo Orcus. Eurydike denotes a nostalgic energy, a desire to revisit the past and perhaps recreate situations which have long gone beyond recall. Orcus requires integrity, authenticity, and genuineness to thrive. It is one's world, given as an oath, to which one is bound, the breaking of which creates turmoil. Together, these points can work as a team, with Eurydike bringing up the past, Orcus cutting through the haze of nostalgia, and simultaneously... continue on with Chronicle on the other side.
Hearing all about Jews and their beloved Israel. This is America.
Hey, don't say that. Jews do so much for us and deserve our thanks.
Okay, so what do they do?
Although they are only 2% of the population, they are running our banks and overall monetary system, ensuring our children receive proper education and medication, entertaining us with TV, movies, magazines, and gossip, running some of our biggest corporations, including the big tech giants, weeding out awful hate speech, and promoting the rainbow of alternative lifestyles and gender identities, and funding the campaigns of our honorable and honest politicians.
Wow, they sure do a lot.
That's right. Don't be an anti-Semite. Let the chosen rulers of this world know you appreciate them.
Thanks, Jews!
Bye.
Welcome back, everyone. I will continue on with this article. So, together, these points can work as a team, with Iridike bringing up the past, Orcus cutting through the haze of nostalgia, and sentimentally to what was truly worthwhile and valid from that time, and Mercury expressing this in update terms and concepts which resonates to today's needs. So effectively, what he thinks, or what he's interpreting, is that he believes with the alignment of these two asteroids, there will be a desire for nostalgia, for something of the past. But he also believes that there is this, that we're going to be entering into a conflict where if something is not, that if an oath is broken, or if there will be lies, there will be turmoil. If there is no honesty, that's his interpretation of these, effectively, of these two asteroids. So a desire for the past and a necessity to be honest, but if the honesty is broken, there'll be chaos. Closer to the eclipse degree are asteroids Cirrus and Persephone, both at 24 Leo, and Atropos at 22 Leo. Cirrus is what beguiles or bewitches us, the things we explore which fundamentally alter us without us even realizing we have changed. Persephone is another call to reclaim the past, particularly to right a wrong, as well as the circumstances which pulls us out of the equilibrium of innocence and requires us to face reality with maturity and respond with growth, because becoming fully engaged and powerful in our own truths. Atropos signs the ending or finality, a terminus to pertaining conditions and a pause while we await rebirth or reconstitution of circumstances. So I guess what he's saying here is that there is there will be a rebirthing process, and there will be a desire to right wrongs. And also more nostalgia, something desirable in the past. In it, when we look at aspects to the eclipse, that we move from the realm of the philosophical or rhetorical to pragmatic concerns on the ground in the world as we know it. Opposing the eclipse is a pairing of asteroids, White House and domiciles? Damocles. Now, again, I couldn't confirm if there was really an asteroid named White House. I tried to double check that, but I couldn't confirm that for myself. If there really is an asteroid called White House, I would be like, oh man, that's weird. Okay, White House and Damocles at 21 and 23 Aquarius. This conjunction has an ongoing pattern since April and will continue into December, which represents a doom hanging overhead for the administration. So effectively, he believes that Trump's administration is not going to succeed. He thinks that it's going to fall apart. That's effectively, he's going to eventually work his way to it. Represents a doom hanging over for his administration and the occupants of the Oval Office specifically. However, its inclusion in the eclipse footprint ramps up the pressure to peak. Think of the old Memorox ad with the man sitting in the chair, literally blown away by the music. Damocles is a karmatic point and cannot be reasoned with or appeased. It blows away. It blows may fall in its own good time, but it will fall regardless. As if to underscore its point, the eclipse also requires asteroid Washingtonia at 25 Scorpio, representing the DC power base and culture. Yeah, is there an asteroid in Washingtonia? Again, I couldn't confirm that, but yeah, it seems a little strange. Which is conjoined by asteroids Arcani and Ophelia, both at 23 Scorpio. Arachne shows the consequences of deception as we become tangled in the web we weave around ourselves, created to entrap others. We find ourselves enmeshed in gossamer, in no hope of escape. I don't know what gossamer means. Probably should have looked that up. Gossamer and no hope of escape. Ophelia connects to feelings of being overwhelmed or drowned by circumstances, which can lead to mental imbalance. This may be bypassed in a perceived rejection, such as eroding approval in polls, which bring us directly to Donald Trump. This grouping is remarkably descriptive of the atmosphere at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, but the points in which it is opposed also is square on the eclipse are perhaps even more telling. So I guess what he's saying is we'll be feeling a sense of hopelessness, and that there will be a tangling of our own webs, I guess, that there will be confusions. That's how he's interpreting, that there will be confusions and there'll be the feeling of hopelessness and despair. There are Centaurus Binary and Enteo Sedna, both at 26 Taurus. Not much is known of Binor. His mystic background is very thin. However, we do know one thing, the meaning of his name, which is literally strong man, that this is how the administration wishes to portray Trump is apparent to Binor's exact conjunction with the ascendance in the inauguration. So it's included in the eclipse pattern and another indicator of pressure on the commander-in-chief. The exact conjunction with Sedna, named for its Inuit goddess, who dwells in the deepest, most inaccessible parts of the Arctic Ocean and refuses to accept adult responsibility, including that the would-be strongman is isolated, unwilling to be held accountable, and inadequate to his task. So again, his prediction on Donald Trump is that he is portrayed as a strong man, but that he is really incompetent and inadequate to his job. Okay, it's an interesting interpretation. Well, of course, I believe that. This guy, though, has a very childish, or naive, rather. He has a very naive interpretation of certain things, because I get the idea that he seems to believe that Donald Trump is the real deal, in the respect that he was fairly elected, where I don't believe that such things are the case. I believe it was the national selection. I believe Trump was chosen to play this part. But he seems to have a more naive view on the way the world works versus how I think it really works. But again, the representative nature of so many points in exact conjunction with each other set a subtone of emphatic statements by the cosmos. The celestial timing to create such precise alignments at such a powerful moment suggests an important message to be conveyed. One more such pairings exists in the chart, though it does not aspect the eclipse degree itself. It's in a union of the asteroids Karma and Icarus at 3 Libra. It shows the comeuppance, the result of our prior actions. So I guess something that we've done will come back to bite us in the ass, maybe. Particularly to those who have been rash, reckless, heedless of the consequences, and taken against advice. If that doesn't sound like Donald Trump, I don't know what would. Or at least that's what he thinks. How much more of the article is there? There's a little bit more. I wish I could read the chat. I'm sorry, guys. I wish I could see the chat. Maybe it's same for everyone. Maybe no one can see the chat. But I think we're getting the idea. This guy this guy thinks that Donald Trump will be a failure. He thinks that there will be a potential wars, uprisings. Let's see. I'm gonna try to skim through this real quick, see if there's really anything of interest, kind of worth reading. Let's see. Asteroids of Saturn. This becomes a guide episode. Well, there was one thing that I did read in this that I thought was very kind of funny, and I will read this paragraph because I thought it was pretty funny. How about this one? So. The point which concludes on Trump's Gemini sun are asteroids Hebrus, Phaeton, and Cassandra at 22, 24, and 25 Gemini, and Enteochaos at 23. Enteochaos, trans-Neptunian object chaos. Now, I did look that up, and I did find it on Wikipedia. They had an article on Enteochaos. So there really is an asteroid or an alleged asteroid beyond Neptune that is named Chaos. And this guy claims that Enteochaos is aligning with Donald Trump. I find that to be very, very interesting. I would argue that you can't make this garbage up, but this is what he's claiming. Again, I don't have any natal charts. I don't know where Enteochaos is or if it even exists at all. But maybe that's the aspect of mysticism, you know, uncertain of what really is true or untrue. You know, there kind of comes a point where I don't really know what's real, what is true, what is untrue. But I would argue that intent is always more important than reality. I wouldn't be surprised if this trans-Neptunian object, chaos, if it really existed, if it wasn't just made for some hypothetical star chart. Well, however, continuing on, because I want to finish this paragraph. So, Enteochaos at 23. Hubris is the root word for hubris, or hybris, maybe. Maybe that's what hybris is, the root word for hubris. Signifies prideful arrogance, a willingness to tempt fate and call down the judgment of heaven. Phaeton represents a spectacular implosion and a fall from grace, or from a position of authority and responsibility for which one is wholly unprepared. Cassandra raises issue of celebrity and trustworthiness. Issue of credibility and trustworthiness. And chaos is just that: turmoil, confusion, and anarchy. All these act to reinforce the eclipse's impact on Donald Trump in ways unlikely to serve him or the nation. So, again, this is this weird dude's interpretation. And so he seems to have a very not too great apparently the stars don't seem to align with Donald Trump and his beliefs, and he kind of thinks that that it'll probably all fail or whatnot. I don't know. But I can agree enough with this guy that, you know, it's just my own personal beliefs. I most certainly do think that I think Donald Trump is being set to fail to some extent. Like I said, I have no clue what is planned for America or the United States. I mean, I suppose there is a very good chance that nothing at all may happen. Donald Trump may come and go, like most Americans, and will just kind of continue on with business as usual, marching towards our technocratic dystopian future that I think very much these people have in mind. That most certainly seems to be the direction that we want to go in, or the direction that they would like to go in. This has been kind of, you know, a little disappointing for like a last segment, I think. And I don't think I really want to leave on a disappointing note. Let's put this article away for now. Let's not read about it. Let's not worry about it. He also seems to think that there's a very real like possibility that Donald Trump may be assassinated. However, I did find, interestingly enough, about these lunar eclipses, that there seems to be a connection to presidents and lunar eclipses. But, you know, that's... I think William McKinley was assassinated on... 1901. I think there was a lunar eclipse or something. I don't know. I think Kennedy also may have died around a lunar eclipse or something. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about half the times anyway. But I guess what I'm saying is, let's just close this article. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I don't know what the future has in store for any of us, though I do kind of think, you know, it makes me think about that South Park episode where I didn't watch it. So I haven't watched South Park in a while, but I do remember that South Park episode where I don't recall if it was it Ben Garrison? Was it Ben Garrison running for president or something? But they had to incorporate Bruce Jenner into this whole, you know, this gag where I think Bruce Jenner stated, buckle up, because I think Ben Garrison was supposed to be the position of Donald Trump or something like that. I know that quite a few people have already commented on this, but I can't help but just be taken back by that idea, you know, buckle up, everyone. Or buckle up because you ain't seen nothing yet. Was that what the full phrase? Buckle up because you ain't seen nothing. No, I don't. I'm not gonna look it up. But certainly, weird things are afoot. No doubt about that. You know, when I see these numbers, and I just see how they're just pointing towards Donald Trump. I mean, I'm not trying to get caught up in the hysteria of some sort of doomsday prophecy, because I don't really want to jump into that. But there, you know, you always have these people seemingly that want to jump into that fray. They just maybe they find it exciting Maybe they want doomsday to occur. Maybe because they're just like, you know, these Christians, maybe they're just these malicious little people that just want to see judgment exacted on all the people that they felt that wronged them. But, sorry, my throat's getting a little rash. And they want to see, they just want to see people that just wronged them or something like that. But, I mean, my advice would be to just keep a level head on things. I think most of us will. I am in the camp where I do believe that something strange will probably happen with Donald Trump or around Donald Trump or during his presidency. But whatever happens, I won't be surprised. Believe me, I will not be surprised if something weird occurs. I just expect something weird to occur eventually. But I'm not gonna freak out about it. I'm not gonna get too worried about it. Who knows? Maybe. Let's entertain this for a moment. What if Nibiru? What if that Nibiru thing really was? Let's just pretend that the Nibiru story is true, and the Nibiru crowd are right. There's no reason to believe that they are right, but let us just pretend that it's true, and then say, whatever I say, like in September of some time. September 22nd, I said? I think it's September 22nd. September 22nd when Nibiru shows up, when it's when they expect it to show up, that something does appear in the sky, okay? Believe me, I am not going to freak out about it if say, the Nibiru thing's true and something appears in the sky because... Let me put it this way. I mean, I'll say this and I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. I don't know what's true and what is untrue. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people have been speculating about Project Bluebeam and stuff. I kind of suspect that if you hear about it, it's probably nothing will probably happen. But something that I've looked into or some beliefs about cosmology and astrotheology, and that's what's fascinating is that from what I understand, all religions are based off of astrotheology. It all seems to be tied in with the stars, planetary alignments, and who knows, maybe that one guy's right about asteroids as well, if asteroids are even real. That's if planets are even real. You know, there are some people out there that believe that the cosmos and what we see is nothing more than a projection of us. That beyond Earth, whether it be a ball or a disc or what have you, some think that space itself is just ether. There isn't any sort of physical tangibility to it, and that it simply just represents who we are. You know, I mean, it could be true. It absolutely could be true because, I don't know. I've never been to space. I've never been to the moon, and I'm not sure if humans have been to the moon. Maybe that's why these people seem to focus so much on cosmology and certain aspects of astrotheology. Certainly is fascinating all the same, you know. But there is that opposite crowd as well that seem to think that, the opposite crowd of like, well, space, stars, and planets dictates what's on Earth. You know, there definitely is that relationship, that as above, so below concept. Some people think that space and the cosmos and the planets and whatnot are a projection of us. And others seem to believe that the space, cosmos, and whatnot guides our lives. And, you know, and I don't know which is which. I can't say one way or another, though I do certainly believe that there is something to cosmology and astrotheology and whatnot. I think there is something to it. I just don't know what. Because I'm just inexperienced, and two, I just don't know what what secrets are being held from us, because if there's anything that humans have or don't have, it's knowledge. We've most certainly been kept in the dark for most of our lives. And, you know, and I think right now with the advent of the internet, which is so interesting, I think we're trying to rediscover or take power back to ourselves in some limited fashion or not. I do think, if anything, I can say that we do seem to be entering into a new time of skepticism. I think, you know, there's a lot of people clambering over each other now more than ever, of people trying to find the truth, just trying to get the truth out there, using the internet to try to discover what's going on in this world. And I admit, it can be frustrating. I think there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, half-baked truthers and whatnot. There's a lot of them. Most of them are, you know, I think many of them are that Alex Jonesian archetype. You know, they got 2 feet. They got one eye to the past and one to the future. I think the Japanese say that, and I tried to shoehorn this into my explanation. Well, what I suppose I'm saying is, I'm a little bit more lenient on other people not being too, being strange, being weird. I kind of figure that the way that we humans have developed thus far, you know, living in a bubble, I think for the longest time, at least for 100 years or so and longer, I think the average human is fed nothing but lies and BS. I think our history is a lie. I think what we're told is mostly lies. I think our religions are mostly lies. I think our science is mostly lies. That sounds awfully cynical of me to say that, but I kind of think wherever there's power, there's people who want to capitalize on that. And so with the effectively, I guess, with the advent of the internet in our modern times, I only figure that this is just a natural recourse of us trying to rediscover ourselves and trying to think independently for once. We'll see a lot of people running around like without their heads, like their heads cut off. But take heart. I think we're going towards a better direction. See you all next week.
Site where you can find insightful articles from the past and present, the latest in health and wellness, research, analysis of current events, profound poetry, amazing artwork, lots of videos and podcasts from other content creators, and so much more. We are in a struggle to awaken as many people as possible, put an end to our enslavement in this toxic culture, and create a future where we can be happy, healthy, and free. Go to RenegadeTribune.com, browse the great content, and do consider joining the crew in publishing your own original work.
Я стою в слепоте. Те, кто слышал, в тишине земной. День за днем, не как без потерь.